Adversity, bring it. The struggle, I welcome it. Snooze on life, never that. I am Dave Regina, and this is the No Snooze Podcast. Come on. Welcome back, No Snooze Podcast, episode 174. As always, I'm in the booth with a new three. We have Roman, I can't even give you a nickname, Vladimirsky, Claudio, the voice, Valenzuela, and I am Dave, the body, Regina. Raised in the Bronx and currently residing in Westchester, Roman is a New Yorker through and through. Prior to entering the real estate world, Roman was on the marketing teams for television brands such as ESPN and CBS. As the years went on, Roman realized his career was stagnant, so he decided to bet on himself. Roman took all of his geographical knowledge, combined it with his marketing and branding skills, and built a brand and business of his own. In 2018, he founded the Vladimirsky Team, TVT, and has helped hundreds of families buy and sell homes, charting a course for their own legacy. Roman always says that through real estate, you can build a legacy that will last generations. With that mentality, TVT has grown and continued to help their clients build legacies through real estate. Roman Vladimirsky, welcome to the No Snooze Podcast.
First of all, thank you for having me. I'm super pumped to be here, but I don't, like, after that introduction, I feel like there's nothing that I can possibly say that can top that. Do we have to still do the podcast?
Listen, man, that's it, guys. Thank you for listening. I appreciate you. You know what's funny? Full transparency. So I hope my energy today is on point. I hope my intention and my clarity is here. But as I shared with these two gentlemen, my morning was atrocious. And it was just a mental morning. So I had a 16-hour day yesterday, get home about 11 p.m., fall asleep by 12, wake up 4:45, go through my morning routine, and my workout was good, but I was tired, you know, and it's tough to get through things when you're tired, but my mentality was like, listen, I know I got the podcast today, I have another strong day of business ahead, I got to stay focused. So I'm leaving the gym, and I have about an hour commute over to the studio. The second I turn left, bus after bus after bus. So I'm stuck behind school buses for typically what's a 50-minute to an hour ride turned into an hour and 30. My patience was on negative. Then I go to Starbucks trying to get myself caffeinated, spill my coffee on my pants. So it's been a morning, to say the least, but I'm very grateful to have you here. And I hope my energy does not reflect the morning that I have, because patience is something that I'm working on.
Your energy is absolutely tremendous, number one. And number two, just because you had a bad morning doesn't mean you're going to have a bad day.
I like that.
Okay?
I love that.
There's many more hours to conquer the day, right?
I love that, yes. So let's start from the beginning. Obviously, we heard where you're from. Give us a little bit of your background, where, I guess, you know, kind of the family dynamic growing up is always something that I like to touch on. I like to understand kind of what makes you tick along the way.
Scary place. so I guess growing up in the Bronx, it was me, my mom, and my brother. My parents divorced when I was young. And looking back at it now is a good thing, right? Some people just aren't meant to be together, right? It was me, my mom, and my brother. And I guess I was practically like a father figure to my brother. We're 5 years apart. I'm older. And school in the Bronx, she, single mother, worked, put herself through college, got her master's. And I think she went back and got her second master's. And, you know, to say we were poor, I don't think we were poor. You know, maybe she made 60 grand a year at the time, and talking 20 years ago, you know, it's not a lot of money for a woman by herself with two kids. But she never made us feel like we didn't have any money. You know what I mean? But she instilled that work ethic in us as we were super, since we were young. Like, nothing was just given to us. You had to earn everything. You want something, you know, we got allowances. I did dishes, 10, 12 years old, doing dishes. Started doing my own laundry at 12 years old. Because, you know, they're not just going to get done for you. And that's the kind of mentality that she instilled in us from a very, very young age. At 14, got my working papers, went right to work. Flower shop, broke up boxes, walked over, delivered flowers to people for a whopping $5.25 an hour, which I guess 20 years ago was a good amount of money for a 14-year-old kid. What did I do? Bought CDs, bought shit that I wanted.
What was the first CD you bought? I'm curious.
Get Rich or Die Trying.
Really? So mine was, first of all, the upbringing here, there's a lot of similarities that I'm hearing, except for it was reversed for me. Like, it was more so my dad and I. Mm. So I was forced to do the laundry, do that stuff, because dad wasn't doing it for me, but wanted to teach me the lessons necessary.
Of course,
I love that mom was strong enough to take her two young boys and force you guys into that, because I can see a lot of women being almost the opposite of that, and saying like, no, let me take care of my babies. Right. You know, let me do the laundry for them. So that's commendable.
And what, I'm sorry to cut you off. No. What that brought like into today, me and my wife, I do my own laundry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't shy away from doing the dishes, feeding the kids, making dinner. You know, it's, I think man, woman, it's a 50-50 thing.
Mm.
You know, mm-hmm. I'm not that kind of guy that, you know, I'm the man of the house. I work. You know, cook, and clean for me. Those days are gone.
No, man. And it's ironic that my first job was in a flower shop. Fulton Flowers,
no
Mount Vernon, New York, which is very close to the Bronx. Yeah. I just wasn't, I wasn't delivering flowers. I was picking up propane tanks and putting them in cars. But the tip money was good. You know, the tip money was good. And then I was on the golf course when I was 12.
Yep.
So same sort of, you know, style of work ethic coming up.
Sure.
Yeah. So mom, I mean, she really was she was instrumental. Was she basically a father figure to you as well? Like, how did she?
She did her best. Mm-hmm. You know, I still talk about it openly to this day. One day.
And was dad not around?
Dad was kind of around. Like, he lived in Florida. Like, he would call, check in. Not like a boy needed him to be around, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, my mom tried, like, so she's from Ukraine. Like, she's European. She wasn't born here. So, like, when it comes time for Little League, she doesn't know what the fuck baseball is or how baseball works. Like, she tried. Oh, you know, you got the heat. Oh, good job. You know, shit like that. It was cool. But she did her best. And one day, I remember I came home, and I think I was about 11. And she got the What's Happening to My Body book for boys. And that was a very awkward situation.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't need to do this. Like,
how old were you?
I think like 11, maybe 12. Mm. I was maybe starting to ask questions about things. And, you know, it was... It just wasn't necessary.
Mm-hmm.
She tried. She did her best as a father figure. And then when she met my stepdad, that's really when I kind of got that first father figure in my life. You know, because he's, you know, I love sports. He loves sports. He has high work ethic, you know, and I needed somebody to kind of instill that in me.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I had the work ethic, I wasn't very disciplined with it.
Mm-hmm.
I made money, I spent money. I made money, I spent money. And that was kind of the theme.
Yep.
Because
yep.
I just wanted to buy my own shit. Mm-hmm. I was a hustler.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't know how to keep my money and make my money grow
to
make more money.
Mm. So Get Rich or Die Trying was yours. Mine, I was in, was it Sam Ash? Is that what it was called?
Yeah.
The CD store? Or what was
Sam Goody.
Sam Goody.
Sam Goody.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Sam Goody. And my first album, and I bought it with my dad, I don't know how he allowed this, was Snoop Dogg's The Last Meal. Like, that album, I've gone back and listened to it, is wild. It's
wild.
Really wild, but I don't know how he allowed like a 10-year-old boy like coming in with the.
But you
I
can't
don't know.
Say pound for pound, I think Get Rich or Die Trying is the best hip hop album ever, beginning to end.
That's a bold statement, but I like it.
Yeah,
You know,
I'm gonna stand by it.
Yeah, I like it. I'm not going to debate it because that can take us completely off track
Yeah,
here.
Sorry,
but it is a very good album. I want to know now. So obviously you're in real estate. What do you believe sets you apart as a agent and business owner now, in what would, I guess some people would say, a oversaturated market with real estate agents?
It is 100% oversaturated, and it's oversaturated with a lot of dishonest people.
Mm.
People who are there for that commission check, people who are there, obviously we're all here to make money,
right?
But I'm here for the long haul. I want, if you buy a house with us or you sell your house with us, I want you to be my friend forever. I want you to introduce me to your friends and your family and so on and so forth. So I'm not just going to push you into buying that house because it's going to make me X amount of dollars.
How do you do that? How do you how do you maintain those relationships?
Just keeping in touch with people. So we have a client appreciation party that we host every year. Happy birthday. happy home anniversary, happy anniversary, happy birthday to Charlie and Jane, your kids. You know, I get to know people on that extra level, and social media is a big part of it. Keeping in touch, you know, keeping an eye on what people are doing, what's new in their life. Because again, it's not just about me, and it's not just about who do you know that I can help buy a house.
Right.
It's what's going on in your life.
Now, from a business perspective, because this is good stuff here. I think a lot of value. Have you systemized this stuff? Like, if Dave Regina buys a house, do you set my birthday on a system, and you get notified, and now you know you and your team are reaching
CRM, out? CRMs are a very big part of it. Keeping your data, so to speak, on there and getting alerts. I get an alert.
What is CRMs for the listeners?
It's a program that gets all your clients' information in.
Okay.
And you get a way to keep track of what's happening with your
clients. I thought it was like client retention measures or something. Measurements or something. I don't know.
Just a CRM.
Oh, all right.
Yeah.
I don't even know if that's
accurate. I don't know either.
I heard what it was and I went with that.
But client retention seems
like it would
fit.
Sold.
It would fit into it. Done. That's what it's called now.
People are, no, it's clicks something.
No. Can we Google that?
Yeah, right. But we lost Justin. We lost, we used to have an intern. Our guy is no longer here with us. I like that, man. And you know, just sitting across from you, I'm a good, I think I'm a good read on, personality, character, energy.
Thanks, man.
And I like what you're saying. You know, I really do. And I also agree. What is it, CV?
Customer Relationship Manager.
You see, that makes sense too.
Hey, listen, I think mine was even better. What would you say is your driving force today? Almost like your Achilles heel. And I think over time that changes, depending on, you know, whatever season in life you're in.
Yeah.
You know, for me right now, I'm going through a tough time with a legal separation and, you know, all that stuff. So my daughter has really become, you know, my Achilles heel. I don't think that will ever change. But I think there are times where, like, you know, I really need her the most. And just sitting back with her at the end of the night and us doing our gratitude prayer and, you know, doing our letters. She's 3 and a half, like I said. And, you know, that those moments right now are something that, like, no matter what's going on in my life, I have that to at least look forward to, you know? So what would you say for you right now is your ticker?
I think you're 100% right at what you said. At any given time, it could be something different. Right. But I would like to challenge you on something, if that's okay.
Yes.
I have a complicated belief in my head where I don't know that our kids are always necessarily our big whys.
Correct.
We love the shit out of our kids. We'll do anything for our kids, our wives, our families. But if our kids were 100% the reason we do everything we do, then why aren't we excelling at the level that we should be excelling?
Mm.
So I think there's something deeper, even beyond our children who we love, you know, deeply. I think there's something deeper beyond that. And I think for me, I want to leave some kind of legacy or impression on my life.
Mm-hmm.
Like my stepfather, when he died, and I know we'll get into that, when he died a millionaire. Nobody knew that. And nobody would ever know that.
Mm-hmm.
Drove Honda, dressed like a regular dude, like a 9-to-5 kind of dude. And just lived a very discreet, and like, that's a legacy to me, you know? I want to leave something behind for my kids and my family.
Mm.
Something that's, I don't know, just not ordinary.
Yeah.
Not ordinary. I don't know if that makes sense.
It makes complete sense. For me, again, I don't know if I would say my daughter's my why. I know she's a huge, you know, reason as to why I want to be the best version of myself.
Yes.
But I also have a deep passion, and I understand that I was placed here with a purpose. And my purpose day in and day out, whether it's on this podcast, whether it's me in business and local government, is to encourage and inspire others.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been kind of leaning into that space for, you know, a while now, but not understanding that that's really what I do. And I don't just do that by saying that. Like, there's, you know, there's actions, and people give me feedback on the inspiration and encouragement. And what that does when I'm inspiring others, ironically, that's when I'm at my peak performance in my brain. Last night at this networking dinner, I'm standing in front of a group of 30 men. And I see them all locked into what I'm saying. And I was so high in the moment, you know, and when I feel that, it really is a, there's a greater purpose there for me.
And it pushes you to do better.
Yes,
than what
for
you're
sure.
Doing. Yeah, I do. I 100% feel that, mm-hmm. especially within the real estate industry. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of younger realtors, like I'm not old, but there's like people, like realtors younger than me
yep.
who are looking up to me, so to speak. Especially because I've been able to do what I do through social media, and the younger generation understands that and wants to see that work for them.
Right.
And they constantly come to me and, you know, for quite with questions and suggestions. Mm-hmm. That inspires me, saying I can't get off my game because these fucking dudes are looking up to me. Mm-hmm. And if I start falling off, you know, what's it going to look like to them?
Yep. How do you lead your team? Like in business, what are some of your core principles? Again, businessman, I like, you know, sure. learning and hearing from other.
Sure. Do your best. Mm-hmm. I like to hold everybody accountable, and I like them to hold me accountable. I think that's the most important thing for me. I need to be held accountable to them and vice versa. Mm-hmm. I don't mind people calling me out if I did something wrong or I fucked up. My biggest thing that they always get on top of me about is I'm a skim reader sometimes. I don't necessarily read the entire paragraph.
Mm-hmm.
And they get on top of me of that because I sometimes miss shit. I'm happy to admit I miss things, and I like to be held accountable when I do miss things. But you better bet your ass I'm coming right after you if that mm-hmm. same thing happens the other way around.
Right.
You know? Our team is three of us right now. We're small, but we pretty fierce, and everybody stays in their own lane. Everybody knows their job. You know? And if one thing goes wrong in a particular area, it's very easy to identify where the link in the chain broke.
Mm.
And I like to think that they kind of work best under that kind of
yeah.
level of accountability.
Do you see expansion with TVT? Or do you like, because I know, you know, one of my best friends, Mike Pirelli, who mm-hmm. I used to do the podcast with, he's, you know, a Greenwich real estate broker, has his own company as well, mm-hmm. but he likes to operate small.
Yeah.
He wants to dominate a local market. What he doesn't want to do is scale so big where he has this huge team for whatever reason. You know, that's his thought. I'm curious on.
So I'm 50-50 on that. And it might relate to what Mike's is saying as well. I do want to have a big team, but I don't just want to put bodies together. Mm. I want to have the right people. These three people, well, myself included, we are the right people.
Mm.
And the reason we are the right three people is because, let's say you decide to buy a house. You come talk to me, and then you're talking to Ryan, and then you're talking to Emily. I am betting you $1 million that you're not going to see a difference in the level of customer service from person to person to person.
Right.
That's what's important.
Because
as long as that level of customer service stays the same, I'll have 10 people. But the hard part is finding the right 10 people.
Right.
So that the customer experience does not change. Because if it starts to change as you're talking to Roman, and then when you're talking to Ryan, it's different, you're not going to want to talk to Ryan. You're just going to want everything to fall on Roman.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of takes the dynamic out. Because right. like without Ryan and Emily, I won't be able to sit here today and do a podcast. I'd have to be out there actually trying to sell houses.
Mm.
You know, so it's everybody staying in their lane and everybody knowing what that level of customer service is. We leverage each other.
Right.
Time.
I like that.
It's that thing, time.
Yeah.
Can't get enough of.
No, absolutely not. You mentioned your stepfather and his impact on your life, and especially yes. not having, you know, having a, you had a father, but not exactly present mm-hmm. to what, you know, the typical boy,
right.
in your words, would need at that time. You mentioned that he passed away and he's no longer with us.
Correct.
One, sorry for your loss.
Thank you.
And two, how was that on the family and the impact that obviously had on you?
It was very tough on my family, specifically my mother.
Mm.
So they were together about 10 years.
Mm.
That's all they got. About 10 years. They were dating for a very long time, and they actually got married. It was a week or two before he died.
Wow.
Like legally married.
Wow.
Yeah. It's crazy. And we knew he wasn't healthy. He had heart problems. He was on the donor list. So it wasn't a surprise, his mm-hmm. death. Everybody was very optimistic. We had plans. He was going to go to Florida because, you know, there's the list works differently down there. It's quicker. And he was going to live there for a couple of months. He was going to get a heart, come back. Everything's going to be okay. And then he got a device that's called an LVAD. And it helps your heart, I guess, pump your heart.
Mm-hmm.
There was like a tube sticking out of his stomach. And one of the complications of that was a stroke. And unfortunately, he had a stroke and he died.
Mm.
It was hard seeing my mother like that, because at this point I'm old. I was in my 20s. Mm-hmm. Very hard seeing her like that. And I had to assume the role of the man of the house now, because I still lived with my mother at the time. So I'm devastated myself, but I got to make sure she's okay. Mm-hmm. I got to make sure my brother's okay. And now I have to start worrying about these things that I never had to worry about before. You know, how's the boiler? How's the roof? When's the lawn gonna get mowed? Mm-hmm. Like all this shit that you just never think of. So I don't know that I got to properly process that grief in that moment. Mm-hmm. As time went on, I think I did through, you know, therapy and mm-hmm. just going through life. But what I do still carry on my shoulders, I wouldn't be a real estate agent if he hadn't died.
Really?
Yes.
And now why is that?
After he died, I got very close with one of his best friends who had a commercial brokerage in Newark. And I was working at CBS Radio at the time. I was miserable fuck. Commuting. We were just talking off the air, commuting on the train. I hated my boss. I hated CBS. I hated everything about those radio stations that was there. Hated it.
CBS, if you're still looking to sponsor the podcast, we do not associate our thoughts with Roman here. All right.
Yep. Okay. So he said, listen, I have a commercial brokerage. It was three or four guys he had there, guys in their 50s. And he's like, look, we have no social media presence. We are a bunch of old guys and we need some help. Mm. Will you come run our marketing team, get our social media off the ground?
Any experience? Or just, well, no, you being young?
Me being young, but yep. I was in the marketing departments at CBS and ESPN. So it did help. It had no correlation with real estate, but marketing in general, I knew that if you want people to know your business, you should be out there in some way, shape, or form. Right. So if you keep it a secret, no one's going to fucking know. Yeah. That's just common sense for me. So he was paying me very little, but he said, you have to commute to Newark from New Rochelle.
It stinks over there.
It wasn't very fun. It wasn't very good food, though, actually. So I said, you know what? Fuck it. I'm going to do it. I'm going to take a chance. I'm miserable. What the fuck's the difference?
Yeah.
You know, what's the difference? So I started commuting over there, and he paid to get my New Jersey license. So I started going over there, and I started following these guys and how they did things. And I'm like, oh, this is pretty fucking cool. I know nothing about New Jersey, but if I can implement this and my business and marketing knowledge in Westchester and New York, where I know how this works, it's going to be pretty lucrative. Mm. And I'm my own boss, which is a whole different conversation. But I was like, why the fuck not? And talked to my girlfriend at the time. Well, she's my fiance at the time. And I just did it. I did it. And I was with my first brokerage for 11 months, outgrew them. Went to KW, was there for 5 years. And then now we just switched a year ago to a different brokerage. But being able to grow the TVT brand, if he doesn't die and I don't get close to his best friend, to me, it never happens. That's how I see it.
Yeah, that's a deep awareness of the situation. Are you you a man of faith?
I'm a man of faith, but not any specific faith.
Like, if not religious. Makes, like not I religious. So I identify as not religious at all, honestly.
Me either.
But more faith-based, and I believe in karma.
Karma, know,
if you
and
do
purpose.
Good, yep. comes back to you.
Absolutely.
If you do bad, bad will eventually 100%. Come back to you.
Yes, I am.
Truth will always come out. Like, those mm-hmm. types of things.
Yes.
So you would identify kind of as the same.
Correct.
I like it, man. We have our ACE Summit coming up. Action cultivates excellence. It's a men's personal and professional development summit. It's a three-day experience, February 16th to 18th, New Paltz, New York, and we're inviting 25 men who are looking to level up their lives. We'll be doing guided cold plunges, leadership training, breath work, group workouts, expert-led workshops, and a keynote from the Yankee legend, Joe Girardi. There's something to be said about surrounding yourself with 25 like-minded men. This is about building a community, fellowship, and a brotherhood. So whether you're looking to grow in business, your fitness, your relationships, or simply develop new lifestyle habits, this retreat is for you. It doesn't matter if you've made mistakes in the past, or you haven't been able to commit, or you're telling yourself you're not worthy. Let me tell you this. This is a new year. 2024, you are worthy. You're supposed to be here. Remember, the best investment you can make is in yourself. We all have a thought of what being a man in today's society is. And yes, it's a strong provider and a protector. But real strength lies in vulnerability. We're looking to bridge the gap between masculinity and vulnerability and bring out the absolute best in each and every one of you. AceSanctuary.com for tickets. We will see you there. What do you consistently battle on, like, I don't know if it's day to day or, you know, maybe weekly. What are some of the challenging thoughts that you have in your head as a man that you're trying to work through?
From a business or personal perspective? Anything.
Personal. Give me personal.
Dude, like, I am naturally a lazy fucking person. Mm. I want nothing more than to lay on the couch every day and watch TV and just fucking eat. But I can't do that because that's not how money's made, right? Can't do that, sitting on the couch. So for me, every day pushing myself to be better and to do better is a constant struggle for me. Mm. It's a constant struggle of kind of getting out of my natural way.
Yeah, well, no, thank you for sharing that. And now how do you battle that? Like, how do you, I guess, take action against the negative thought?
I just don't have a choice. I don't know if that's an easy answer or a cop-out. I don't have a choice.
What do you do?
My kids got to go to school. My kids have to eat. Me and my wife have bills to pay. The mortgage bill is still there. Mm-hmm. My team depends on me. They have their own bills, you know, and I don't have a fucking choice.
So that's a good answer.
And I enjoy what I do.
And you enjoy it. But this is a good answer, right? Yeah. But also there's a difference between just going through the motions, paying your bills, doing all the things versus you being, you give me like hustler vibes. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. You seem like you're a real grinder and you're also energetic while you do it. You know, you put out a positive product, you attack things and you go get it. That's why, you know, you're on this podcast right now. So the actions that you're taking, I do believe are more than just like, yeah, because I have to. What are some of the like habits and routines that keep you, you know, aligned and focused?
So I'm in therapy. Been in therapy for a while. And that's a big help for me. I know I say like I'm an open book, you can talk to me about whatever mm-hmm. I want, but like sitting sometimes one-on-one, like I'm not a big here's talking, let's talk about our feelings kind of stuff.
I don't think any of us are.
Yeah,
like I was the complete opposite. I hated therapy. I had the worst experience ever. And now I do have an addictive personality. So like now I'm super obsessed with the vulnerability space. Yeah. And like, you know, I've completely shifted. not only one therapist, I got two.
Oh, really?
You know what I'm saying? Well, so one was relationship based. Okay. And then my other was personal.
Interesting.
Well, is personal.
Sure.
Therapist. But like it was... It's very typical of my brain and my mindset because like I absolutely hated this thing. And, you know, one of my biggest downfalls in life in general has always been the uncomfortable conversations. You know, like I didn't really know how to articulate my thoughts when I was in uncomfortable situations. And I think most men can relate to that.
Yeah,
and it's a very challenging thing because as a man, you almost feel a little broken to expose yourself and you feel weak because our egos are, you know, the biggest things that we have. But then once you start to tear those things down and you tear it down naturally through the course of therapy, but the absolute, so they, when I first went into therapy, they asked me, what are your thoughts on therapy? And I immediately said, listen, don't take this the wrong way. Do not open this conversation with how are you feeling today? Tell me your thoughts.
Yeah.
Don't do that to me. Because that, I have trauma with it. Like, I never wanted to do that. You know, so what do you like about therapy? And how has it helped?
So, for me, it was about finding the right therapist.
Mm.
I think I went to 3 before I got to Eric. And Eric, I can relate to. It's like, we're like 2 dudes talking.
Right.
And it's like me and you sitting here, mm-hmm. having a conversation. Hey, what's going on? And he can relate and kind of give some feedback from his experiences on what's worked or hasn't worked for him.
Yep.
And I don't feel like I'm in therapy. I feel like I'm just talking to a buddy at the bar, even though we're not at the bar,
mm-hmm.
you know? And it feels natural. And I feel like when we're done, like a fucking weight is lifted off my shoulders, you know? And I feel like everybody should be in therapy in some way, shape or form. Cause there is no way that any human can carry the burden of what we all carry and be healthy. It's not possible.
I agree 100%. I think us as a society, though, we need to identify different terminology. Mm. Like, because people, especially our age, for whatever reason, now it's becoming more normal, but like therapy was very voodoo back in the day. Like, it was very like, oh, this person's, you're going to see a shrink? Yeah. Like, yo, this dude's a little off. You know what I mean? Like, I remember my uncle sitting around a table like, you need a fucking shrink. You know what I mean? Like, it was like a bad thing, you know? So you almost feel like a crazy person. Whereas, you know, I am a huge proponent of therapy and the positive outcomes. But it's very challenging. It really is, because you mentioned the word accountability. I think for me, the biggest thing is that accountability factor. You know, it's very easy for us to want to hold ourselves accountable. But if you don't have anybody else really doing it for you, mm-hmm. like the first thing that I do with Mike, not Mike Pirelli, but my therapist, Mike, is a weekly check-in, man. And like, I'm responsible and accountable if I want to grow, mm-hmm. to be honest about my week. And I immediately start with the thorns that are there. I don't talk about the roses. I go with the thorns because it's uncomfortable.
Yep.
So I'll be like, listen, man, I blew up at somebody at work today. I had no patience with my daughter. You know, I flipped off three people while I was driving, you know, like, and I work through those things. And it's very helpful. And I also want to be clear on the therapy thing. Just because you're in therapy doesn't mean that you completely change your life right away.
No, it's time.
It's time. And it's commitment. Awareness, commitment, consistency. But it starts to change your thoughts. Would you agree with that?
100%. 100%. And it's funny you mentioned about your daughter. I hate myself, truly, when I lose my temper with my kids. It eats at me. And my wife says to me, it's funny about, you know, talking to your wife versus your therapist. My wife said to me, you know, you got to be careful when you lose your temper, because to this little girl, you're a large man who's, whether you're yelling or you're telling her not to do something. And that resonated with me. So I was like, shit, like, I don't want to scare her. I don't want her to be afraid of me. So I went to my therapist and I said, you know, hey, this is what my wife said. I don't want to be that guy. You know, what can I do? He's like, yes, that's one way to look at it. But you also have to remember that you're not 24/7 that guy.
Right.
You're also the guy that protects her, cuddles her when she's sick, gives her food, gives her medicine. You play with her. Like, you do all the dress up and all that shit, which is true. I do that.
You put the wig on?
I'll do whatever she wants. Yeah, me too. She's got me.
I agree.
I'm screwed. I'm in trouble.
No, it's a great point, man. Like, the other day, and I'm not happy about it, and I immediately felt like a dick.
Yep.
So I don't like to spank Callie. I really don't. And I should have been a little bit more understanding of where she was in the night. You know, when they get tired, they become like literally like
gremlins.
Delusional gremlins. Yeah like they're not really functioning.
No.
So she had this rash and I put this cream on, and the cream is like expensive. And I do try to teach her, like, she has like stupid habits where she snaps her hair ties. And I'm like, you know, I know they're cheap, but like, that's money. Like, stop breaking my money.
It's a good point.
You know, like, so that's one piece. So I think it stems from that. But she had this rash and I put this expensive cream on her and it was like kind of on her face. And I said, don't wipe it off. So I probably jinxed it. The second I put the cream on, I see her get under the cover and wipe it all over my white sheets. Mm. I kind of just said, hey, but immediately, bang, like, and in the leg, right? Like, in the leg. And even that sounded crazy, right?
Yeah.
But I saw her face. And it wasn't because she was hurting. Like, I just, you know.
She was surprised.
But she was shocked.
Yeah.
And then she started crying because she saw my reaction and how bad that I felt. And I messed up the moment, because in that moment, when you do reprimand like that, I should have like walked away and come back 2 minutes later. But in that moment, I was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. Like, I broke down.
Yeah.
And then I was like, what message am I even putting out here? Like, you know, oh, if you look at me and cry, it's okay. Like, I didn't even know as a parent, but I felt bad for being that aggressor in that moment. But it was like something so frustrating to me. And I didn't know how to handle it. And I really messed that moment up.
I don't know that you did, man. You got to, first of all, we really, as parents, are hard on ourselves. We have to remember that we're fucking human too, mm-hmm. with emotions and feelings and thoughts that we can't necessarily always control. And dude, like you have one kid, I have two. And so my daughter's almost three, my son's one. The two of them together can really fucking wear you down, man. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I think it's okay to be a little bit upset or angry in a healthy way. Mm. You know, I think it's okay. We have to stop telling ourselves it's not.
Yeah. I just have a thing. Like, my dad, I like the way he parented us. He hit me in my life maybe 3 times, but when he hit me, he busted my ass. You know, like, I don't ever want to put hands on my daughter because obviously and I don't think he's ever put hands on my sister. Yeah. But me and my brother, like, my brother got snatched through a window. Like, you
probably
know,
deserved it.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Because my dad said, I remember this. Oh boy, shout out Matty Ridge. Sorry, my brother. So he was in the back of a car and my dad like called him in a lie. So my dad came to the window. My dad's a very calm dude. So you already know when calm men start to escalate, like, you know where that's going. So my brother, for whatever reason, he might have been on the ganja or something in high school. I don't know, because his thought process was a little off. Because the moment my dad turns up, it's like, you better de-escalate that, because he's the calm guy. So he looked at my brother and he said, Matt, are you lying to me? He said, no. He said, Matt, I'm going to ask you one time, are you lying to me? And my brother said, no. And he already knew he was lying. He yanked him out of the car window onto the floor. And my brother was a high school man, like a high school man. My dad's not this big dude. But my point is, like, as a parent, I really respected how he handled things because he always gave us opportunity to fix things before they ever got bad.
Yeah.
We kind of made mistakes along the way, you know. And I do believe that, like, even from a male perspective to a young boy, it's different with a little physicality versus a young girl. You know how innocent they are. Like,
You know? And, like, you got to remember, like, my mother raised me. So she never hit us. Never laid a hand on any of us. Maybe she should have.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like I did some stupid shit looking back at it now. And I think for me it was, I felt remorse, but not because, like, if she would have hit me, obviously I would have been remorseful, but I felt remorse more so the fact, like, I felt like I let her down.
Mm.
I felt like I let her down. She put trust in me.
Right.
She fought for me and I fucked up and I let her down.
Mm.
You know, like that's the kind of shit that bothers me.
Yeah. Let me transition you a little bit to goal setting, specifically in business. How do you set goals with your team or by yourself? And then how do you attack them? What's your process here?
So for us, it's really about, you know, we have numeric goals, like how many units we want to sell a year, which is the goal. And obviously the goal is to always do more than we did the previous year.
Do you set annual goals or do you break these things down? Like, are you like, all right, the goal is 35 units. But now, are you measuring along the way or are you just like, okay, 3 months in, I'm at 10, or are you measuring it every month?
So we have weekly one-on-one. Weekly team meetings and I have weekly one-on-ones individually with my team.
Cool.
You know, and everybody has their own goals for their given position.
Gotcha.
That they do. So their goals might not necessarily be the same as my goals, but it all comes into the overall arching team goal.
Right.
So we do talk about, it weekly. Like, where are we falling short? Where can we be doing better? And I would say week to week, like, it's different.
Mm-hmm.
It's different. But if the obviously the market's the market sometimes. That's what we can't control. But what we can control is how many people we're meeting.
Outreach.
How many people we're talking to.
Right.
Where are we going? Who are we seeing? You know, who haven't we talked to in a while that we can be talking to? So that's kind of how we operate. Mm. We're very open.
Any strategies on, and I guess tips to provide to the listener on how to be seen more?
Dude, I mean, I come from the Tony Peck School of Marketing. So it's content, lots and lots of content. But up until a year ago, I never really went to networking events. And he would scold me for it all the time because he's the king of networking.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to, people have to see you in person as well. It can't just be through the screen.
Right.
Right. So it's through that. It's going, seeing and meeting new people, networking, and not forgetting your past clients, not forgetting, like, going to see people. Like, I just went and had a coffee with a past client yesterday at their house. Things like that. And it all compounds, as well as automation, newsletters, things like that. It all works together. It has to work together.
I really commend that. And especially about, like, you know, Tony and Fran and what they do with Why Not You Media. Obviously that's how we connected.
Yep.
I think the thing that's different there and the takeaway for everybody is, like, the intention, the pure intention, even after you make the sale, you know, like, that to me is what I'm hearing, even for you, is the real difference maker here. Cause I think I could be doing that better. I think I can be following up more with people that I've done business with in the past, or, you know, just checking in on people that, you know, you've come across and now maybe your time together has passed.
Maybe you need a CRM.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what I need. I don't even remember the acronym for it now, what I said. Not the real one, what I said, but, you know, it was some retention. Client relations, client retention something. So that's even a takeaway for me. No, I really like that. And now with your one-on-ones, I'm a huge proponent of one-on-ones. Sure. I believe they provide extreme accountability. When somebody's not up to par, or you have somebody who's going through something personally that may be affecting the business, how do you handle those situations?
So there are people, and not just realtors, business owners, that are, you know, always about work. Big proponent of work-life balance, right? There's life around our job and what we do. And if something is happening with, like, my team is like my family, right? So Ryan just went through this a couple of weeks ago. His mom, you know, was selling her house, and she's by herself, and he's the son that's here. Mm-hmm. And so he has to be there and to attend to her. And I get that. But as long as, if you're going to take a couple of days off and you're not here, do it before you go. Whatever numbers you have to hit, do it when you come back. You know, but I never keep somebody at work when they need to be elsewhere. I get that. Because I don't want, I worked for those kind of people.
Right.
I'm not that boss.
Right.
I don't even like to be called boss. Just the leader.
You like Bud. Manager.
Bud. Oh, dude, don't get me started.
So now we got to tell a story. Funny story. So,
excuse me.
Shout out Vincent Maselli, who, you know, has become a mentor and friend in a lot of things that we're doing currently. And he put up a post that was basically like, he's riding a bike, like an air bike or something. He's like, I effing hate when people call me pal, buddy, boss, something like that. Because if you know somebody's name, address them by their name, because it's a very like derogatory statement without being like officially derogatory, right? So Roman texted me and it was fresh in my head. Yeah. That's why I sent it to you. And we didn't even really have a relationship, no. Right? So you probably took it away and I want to ask about that. But so he says, hey, bud, what time should I be there for the podcast or something? Or how much time should I allocate? So I basically said, like, you know, plan this
basically
time.
Basically said, don't fucking call me bud.
Plan this time. And then on IG, I went and sent him the clip of Vincent saying this. And he was like, oh, wow, I've never thought about this. How did you feel with that? And did you understand the context after?
I definitely understand it.
And I know you didn't
it.
Mean it by that.
No. Listen, I definitely understand that. It. However, I don't have to agree with it. Right?
Right.
I don't have to agree with it. I'm one of those people that likes to contest things that people call normal. I don't agree necessarily. Like bro, brother, bud, buddy, what's going on? Like,
bro and brother, I think, are different. Bud.
Talk to me about that.
Bud. Buddy, pal, boss, you said. Boss, I don't like.
I don't like boss when I'm...
Why?
Because I don't want to be somebody's boss. I want to be somebody's leader.
So what is a pal?
A pal?
What's a buddy?
Buddy. It's a buddy. Hey, buddy.
Same thing. It gives that same connotation. Like, I don't like boss because technically I am in a leadership role.
Right.
And I don't want to be considered your boss. Now, if you genuinely give me a salute, like, and I give you something and you say, yes, boss, like as a joke, I'm good with that.
Yeah.
But don't come up to me and big time me like, what's going on, boss? How are you today? I despise it. And honestly, there's a listener that I'm looking at right now who tunes in every week. So when you listen to this, I'm talking to her. Mary Bell, who happens to be a former guest on the podcast. She called me boss. I said, do not call me that.
No.
And she was like, oh my God, I don't mean it in any bad way.
Well, they do it on purpose now. Boss man. Punch him in the face.
Why? See?
I don't know.
The same thing
it irks
about
me.
Pal.
Like manager. Manager
buddy,
irks
bud?
Me.
Bud?
No.
Hey, bud.
I get the, I guess if you want to say like I'm talking like a 5-year-old kind of thing. Hey, bud. Hey, little buddy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
How you doing?
Yes.
Good seeing you.
I don't know. There's some negative kind of, you get it, CV? Like, do you, from hearing it, like, is that something that you can, like, kind of relate to? Or is it just me? Am I crazy here?
No, it makes sense. I mean, you know, there's some words that make you feel, like, small.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Childish.
Or, like, and, are you trying to make me feel tiny? Then, like,
well, I would
the
also
the other ones
say,
are right. Making you try to feel, like, bigger than what
you're
you really
man,
are.
Right?
It's almost like condescending, like, hey, yes. Boss. Hey, superior.
Yeah, exactly.
I think maybe we need to look within ourselves and figure out what it is about these words
that make
us feel
yes.
How they make us feel.
Right.
It's probably very much an us thing more
yeah.
Than
oh,
anybody. I think I'm sure there's certain words that trigger you that don't trigger you, and there's some that trigger you, that, you know?
Yeah.
So it's probably something
well,
you
well, we definitely agree on the boss thing, right?
Like boss. Yeah, don't call me boss.
Right, definitely not. And I'm, I don't like buddy.
Buddy.
That buddy's weird, bro.
Buddy the elf.
Like, I always say my brother all day long.
Yes.
You know, like, bro, that, like, I think that's
fine. Brother makes you feel equal.
Yeah, yeah. Like, yeah. There's no, but buddy is like, hey, buddy. I don't know. Whatever.
This is a great conversation.
This episode is brought to you by Hudson Valley Teeth Whitening. Hudson Valley Teeth Whitening is an experienced teeth whitening salon where you can get up to 7 shades lighter with just a 60 or 90 minute session in a professional and relaxing setting. They offer the most superior product coupled with the highest quality of customer service available to get you instant results. Whether you have an important event to attend, such as a wedding, birthday, anniversary, interview, or you are just unhappy with the color of your teeth, this LED light technology helps whiten your teeth fast and easy. At Hudson Valley Teeth Whitening, they understand how important your smile is to you. And speaking from personal experience, you'll be guided by highly efficient staff in a relaxing environment to reach your desired shade. Let them know you're a friend of Dave's from the No Snooze podcast and connect with them at HudsonValleyTeethWhitening.com or on Instagram at HV Teeth Whitening. Now, back to the epi. Fatherhood, man. So you said your kids are how old?
So my daughter's going to be 3 in April.
Okay.
And my son just turned 1 Christmas.
Your sleep schedule is crazy right now.
I will say, I don't know. I know this is your first time seeing me, but I am super refreshed today because my son slept till 7 o'clock. Amazing.
Beautiful.
Through the night.
Nothing better. Sometimes you nothing wake better. Up and you open one eye and you're like, what time is it? Yeah! It's like the biggest win because you got through the night, right? No, man, I get it.
Yeah.
What do you love the most about fatherhood?
I just love watching them. Sometimes I just sit there and I just watch the two of them play with each other.
Wild, right?
They're like little people. Yeah. They're like little fucking humans that I created.
Little buddies.
Little buddies and pals. It's great, man. And just my daughter, so she's like, you have a 3-year-old, so yep. They're starting to talk more.
Yeah.
And they say things. And when she says things correctly, it blows my mind.
Right, right.
Like large words.
So
and she curses too.
Yeah, it's great. It's great. Yeah, the context now. So Callie's so funny. I started mocking her, like just being funny one day, and she did something, and I did it too, and she like flipped her hair, and then I like did it, and she's like, "Stop following me." And I'm like, "It's not following." She's like, "Yes, you're following me." I'm like, "I'm not following you." It's called mocking. But it, like her context and her understanding is so deep now. Yeah. So I understand what you're saying. What's been the biggest challenge besides sleep?
Besides sleep?
Because sleep is number one.
I mean, listen, man, if we're being honest here,
mm-hmm.
Everything's so fucking expensive.
Mm.
That's probably the biggest challenge.
Daycare?
Dude.
And then two, the late charges?
They're both in daycare.
Oh, I'd slide them in as one.
Yeah, no wish way. I could.
Wait, well, like, we identify as one in today's society.
Like,
this is a we. I am a we. I just happen to have 4 legs, 2 separate bodies.
20 fingers. That's great. Yeah, man, just the cost of things.
Yeah.
Diapers, formula. My son's just off the formula now, which is amazing. Daycare, everything. Everything. You go to Target, $800 like this. Daycare is over fucking $5,000 a month.
And how about the late charges? Do they do that? Do they hit you with that?
I did get hit once with the late charge, but I did get it. I got it eliminated.
Yeah.
I did get it.
They did that
eliminated.
To me once too.
Yeah.
So I kindly walked into the office and that charge was quickly removed. Because I said, Do you know what's going on here? It's 5:07. I didn't get here in time. Because
wait a minute. Late because you
yes.
Oh, see that does I thought you meant like so I was late on a payment.
$75 fee, Roman.
For 7 minutes?
That's what I said.
Wow.
So they're like, well, it doesn't matter if it's 7 minutes or I said, so I'm gonna leave her here indefinitely. If I'm being charged $75, I'm going to
amazing.
The supermarket. I'm going to the gym. I'll be back at 9 p.m. tonight if you're going to charge me $75.
That's unreal.
5:07, take that off. It's crazy, but it's a business. You know, I get it, but it's expensive out here. So I hear you.
Fuck, man.
What's been the toughest? And again, don't get into specifics of your, marriage and relationship, but like in terms of the relationship, what's the hardest part with a team member, like your wife, while you're both like just going through the stuff of parenting with two?
It's a lot of times, so we're both very, like my wife's Italian, right? So we're both very vocal.
Animated.
And animated, yes, about how we feel in any given situation. So for us, we really working hard. We haven't mastered it yet.
Mm-hmm.
We're working hard about controlling our emotions in front of the children.
Mm.
because look, like my wife's job is probably 1,000 times harder than mine. She's a special education teacher in the Bronx. Mm. And she works with like 6 to 8 year olds, you know, who have special needs. Mm. So
God bless her.
She deals with kids all fucking day. Mm. And then she comes home. So I drop the kids off. She picks them up from daycare and then she's home with them till I get home. So I can imagine how nutty she is.
Right.
You know, so for us, it's about continuously negotiating about who's doing what, right? Who's responsible for what once I'm home and once we're home together.
Right.
And I think for us, the biggest challenge too has been we shouldn't compete with each other about who's done more or who's done less.
Can't keep score.
Can't keep score. Can't keep, and I'm guilty of it. I'm guilty
of
it.
We all are.
You know, we're a team. Mm. We're a team. They need us there both together. Mm-hmm. And once we're not a team, they fucking sense it and they will attack.
Yeah. Yes.
They will attack.
How, thank you for bringing that to light and sharing
that. Of course.
That. How do you empathize with your wife, man? Because I think as men, obviously first steps are being aware and, you know, having these types of conversations and you being aware of what your wife does for a living and then coming home seems very challenging. But now how do you really take action on the empathy piece here?
I think I could do a better job of that. I think I'm going to send her this clip once this podcast comes out so she can listen to it.
What's her name?
Alana.
Alana. You heard it here first. Okay.
You know, I think for us, it's once everybody's asleep and the war is over, you know, we kind of sit down, reflect on our day. And, you know, a lot of times it's, hey, I'm sorry for saying this or I'm sorry for not doing that.
Yep.
And her too, you know.
Got to throw that in there.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Alana, you know what I'm talking about. you know, and it's tough, man. It's tough. But I think at the end of the day, she and I both have an understanding that we both work hard. Her job is more physically challenging. My job is more mentally challenging. Because mm-hmm. I don't care what anybody says. You do not understand the challenges of running your own fucking business. Like, I understand her job is hard too. Mm-hmm. And I'm not demeaning it in any way.
Right.
But this is hard on the mind. And when it's hard on the mind, it's hard on the body. Mm. You know? So we got to stop comparing.
Right, right, right.
Whose job's
harder?
What
do you, in terms of Alana, what are you most grateful for about her?
Her selflessness.
Wait, she will. The camera's on you now. Go ahead.
Her selflessness. She is the most selfless person I know. No matter how she feels, no matter how her day was, she will take the shirt off her back for somebody she cares about. Mm. Whether it's her kids, me, her sisters, parents, anybody. She will be there for you. You call her, she's there in a heartbeat.
Mm. I love hearing that.
Thanks, man. I love her.
Yeah.
She's the best person I know.
That's awesome. So I know you mentioned CBS wasn't the greatest experience, but no. There had to be some, you know, I call these big box businesses, right? Like CBS, ESPN that you've worked for. What were some of the best lessons that you still apply today in your business on a smaller scale?
So working at CBS taught me how not to be a boss, taught me what not to do.
Okay. And why?
Not to demean your employees.
Oh, wow. So you had a direct, and let's be clear about this, you had a direct supervisor that was just not a good supervisor?
He was director of marketing. His name is Frank Imedi, and he was a piece of shit. All right? Take it to the bank. Okay? Jesus. I have no problem saying it. Bad guy. Wow. And I think he no longer works there. And he was let go for conduct detrimental to the organization.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Bad guy. But I did learn a lot about what not to do.
Okay.
But my experience at ESPN was unbelievable. Mm. Unbelievable. I still keep in touch with a lot of people that are there.
Any takeaways?
I learned a lot about business. I learned a lot about marketing, which obviously, as you can see today, has been very helpful to me. Mm-hmm. And I think I still have a challenge. I still have a challenge where I want, and I've talked about this with numerous people that still work there. I want to go back into that world to kind of penetrate that for my real estate business, right? I mean, ESPN. It would be great for
leader in sports,
right? Worldwide leader. But I have a hard time mentally thinking that those people still see me as the intern, as the promotions assistant that I was, that I'm not who I am today.
Right, right, right.
Because this is 2016 I left. Mm.
I struggle with that too. It's funny. Yeah. So now I'm a deputy commissioner, right? And when I was working for Westchester County, I started when I was 15 years old. You know, and now I'm local municipality. Mm. So whenever I go back to Westchester County and the old timers are there, they kind of like ask me to make the coffee type thing. And I'm like, listen, boss,
Yeah.
But I still do it. I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to lie because, you know, they really did. They taught me everything I know, you know, and going from a large $50+ million budget to, you know, the small $5 to $7 million budget, you learn a lot. You know, it was almost an ego thing for me, though. Yeah. I got to kind of remove that ego and just realize, like, I'll forever be their little Davey that went and got them coffee. But meanwhile, I'm like, yo, like, I'm out here. I'm a deputy commissioner, guys. Yeah. Like, I hold the same title as you now, but they'll never see that.
Yeah. And for me, it's like, so I started out as an intern there, and then they hired me, and I was there for 5 years almost, I feel like. And
with ESPN. Where's the office?
So it was for 98.7. It was for the local ESPN New York, for the radio station.
Oh.
They were above the Garden at Penn Plaza when I first got there. And then we moved to West End Avenue and 66th Street.
Wow. What was the role?
Promotions assistant. Mm. So I did a lot of setting up for their promotional hits at different bars and all their live broadcasts for the Michael Kay Show, all that stuff. We were set up. I was at every Jet game. Hate the Jets.
Us too. Don't worry. We're good. Mike is no longer here, so we can talk all day about the Jets.
But it was a great experience as somebody in my mid-20s with no responsibilities, still living at home. But eventually I needed to make some money. Mm-hmm. And that's why I left for a better gig at CBS. Didn't turn out that way. Mm. But now going back to these people, can they see me? Would they trust me with the responsibility of selling their million-dollar house?
Right.
The kid that was there going to the bars and giving out t-shirts.
Right.
Am I going to let him sell my house? I don't know. Right. Or maybe it's just me. I don't know. I don't know.
And now, so you're tapping into those markets again?
I'm trying.
Okay.
I'm trying. Lunches.
Yeah, yeah.
Coffee dates.
Yeah.
Things like that. I'm trying.
That's awesome.
I'll get there.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I'll get there. Any big lesson that was learned, like specific takeaway from like an ESPN for me? Like I want to know on the scale of what ESPN provides, was there like a motto or something that they just live by and they execute on daily?
Listen, as much as everybody loves ESPN for what it stands for our country or the world even, mm-hmm. I think working there, it's a little bit different. It's very corporate, as I guess most corporate companies are.
Right.
You are very expendable, okay? People say I was promised a raise and a better job for years, dude. And in those types of companies, it's all about who you know. I interviewed with 17 different departments. I must have been to like 20 plus interviews in many aspects of ESPN.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't get a single job. Mm. And listen, it's easy for me to sit back here and say that it wasn't my fault. Maybe I could have interviewed better, but it's all about who you know in a company like that.
Right.
And I think that's what really bothers me about corporate America.
Mm-hmm.
It's about who you know.
Well, I think just to recap that, I think that's your lesson.
That is my lesson.
Yeah, because now you've actually I hear a lot of good things that people say, you know, and I always challenge people to like give me some tangible. No, like give me something tangible, yeah. You know, like don't just talk.
Yeah.
But so like now seeing what you do, I think that was the lesson. You didn't like that so much. So now you're like, well, I'm going to know every person in every room.
100%.
You know, so that 100%. That I think is the lesson.
That's a good point. See, I didn't even put that together.
Well, that's what
that's
I wanted
cool.
to. Yeah, that's what I wanted to bring
Thanks,
clarity
that's,
to.
That's great.
I guess this is more on just like your circle. Are you conscious of like who you surround yourself with?
Very.
And what impact has positive or negative the people that are closest to you provided you with?
So the people that I want to keep around me is people that are going to help me grow as a person, as a husband, as a father, as a business owner, as a person of the community. There are people that I meet immediately. I don't want to know them.
Mm-hmm.
No interest in knowing them. I don't need their business. I don't want their business. I want to surround myself with people that are going to help me grow, whether it's by just putting me on a pedestal and saying, hey, you got this, pal, or, you know, sending me business, you know, just people who are of the same mindset as me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to be with people that aren't ethical,
mm-hmm.
I guess,
yeah, yeah.
So to speak. And there's a lot of that in my industry.
Are you intentional about what you provide to them?
In terms of?
Well, because you said
in terms of the people who support me or the people that I don't want
to. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No,
when you're
intentional about the people that you surround yourself with,
100%.
What value do you seek to provide them with?
So I want to support everybody in any way that I possibly can. if you're a restaurant owner, I'm going to go eat your restaurant. Okay. If you own a beauty salon, I'm going to tell my wife, hey, you got to go check out some beauty salon.
I was going to say, do you go?
Yeah. Well, I have my one barber that I go to. Like, I want to help support whether it's somebody's business or whether it's somebody's new venture that they got going on, mm-hmm. new product that they've have, or they have a, you know, a wife who has a new product that they want to push. I am big supporter of, if I support people, they're going to support me, but I'm not going to expect it, if that makes any sense. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to expect it.
Right.
But and at the same time, I want to become the person that everybody knows that if I go to this person, I'm going to get what I need. Quick, funny story to kind of correlate that.
Yeah.
One of my deans from high school, who I still keep in
touch with.
Where'd
you go to high school, by the way?
Riverdale Kingsbridge Academy. That's a public school, actually.
It's a what?
It's a public school.
Oh, okay.
So calls me up a couple of months ago. Roman, she's like almost nervous. I'm like, what's going on? What happened? And she never really calls me. We just text. She's like, well, one of my good friends was supposed to be getting married today. And it was one of the nights after the big rainstorms. The restaurant she was supposed to have her ceremony and her dinner flooded. Mm. Help me where to go. Why the fuck would you call a real estate agent to help you where to go for a restaurant? But she knows that I knew people.
Mm-hmm.
Had her set up in 2 hours at a new spot.
Wow.
Had the best wedding.
That's awesome. And that.
And that's something they'll never forget.
No, never. That, I mean, that's a, I mean, not irreplaceable, but that is priceless.
Priceless.
That, literally that's priceless. Priceless. 100%. Priceless. That 100%. Person will be forever. In their mind, they'll be forever indebted to you. Whereas you don't expect anything.
No, I don't. Because
it was an easy... And that's the thing. Like,
it's the connection.
You just made the connection, but to somebody else, that was the biggest potential life-saving moment of their entire life.
It's a wedding.
So now they're going to be conscious of that whenever they can try to plug you into business and stuff like that. But that's why building networks is so important.
Huge.
Just like, so recently, in the networking space, I had a problem. And I guess it's my own... It's my own experience with them, with like masterminds and networking groups. In the past, I've seen a lot of talk, no action.
Yeah.
You know, and it kind of steered me away because I'm like, yo, I need to be focused. If my time is going to be spent in networking and masterminds, I need to be able to implement the things that are being done, you know? And now, just recently, the first, you know, my involvement back again is now with Sean Degnan, who's a business partner of mine now. And there's real action behind the networking events, you know, which is huge to me. I think social hour is great and you're shaking hands and that leads to business. But I have to be very intentional now, obviously, with my time, just like everybody does. And, you know, I think at times those networking events could be a little foo-foo.
Yeah.
You know, so you got to find the right ones.
The right people, and you also have to follow up.
100%.
Just because you meet somebody at a networking event doesn't mean you're going to business. You got to build and cultivate that relationship.
100%. And nobody does that better than Tony Peck.
Nobody.
Nobody.
Nobody. I always say Tony Peck can start any business he wants. He'll crush his competition.
Absolutely. 100%. Crush it. I need a little caffeine here.
Yeah.
As we wrap this up, is there a motto that you personally like live by, something you think about constantly in terms of, I don't know, it could be a mantra, a quote, a past experience, just something you're conscious of all the time?
I don't know if I have a specific mantra or quote, but something I tell my daughter all the time is don't use the word can't. I don't like when she says that I can't do something.
Why?
Because you can do anything you want to.
Can you?
You can.
You can.
You can. If you work hard at it, you can. I believe you can. I think the only people that hold us back are ourselves.
Yeah, absolutely. So one of my mantra on my work phone is, you know, you hit the screen and it says, you are your only limit.
Yeah.
And I believe that.
It's true.
But also I think in terms of striving for something to be personally excellent at, I do believe at times, like to become a singer, right? Like I can go practice and become a singer, but I really can't. I mean, can I? I sing country music really good, but that's my shameless
Let's
plug.
Hear it.
No. But like, I do think there are certain things that like, you know, you can do, but maybe you can't really become the best at, you know? So I think I'm telling my daughter the same thing. 100%.
Right.
100%.
You can try. And I kind of had this conversation with my wife the other day. Like, I think as parents, we want the best for our kids, but the best might not always be telling them that they can't do something. She was like, well, what if our daughter comes and says she wants to be an astronaut? I said, I don't know. she could fucking try to be an astronaut.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I don't want to hold them back. I don't want to say you can't do something. Like, I want them to do what they want and what makes them happy. And if that's being an astronaut, or if that's, you know, playing the drums at Penn Station, are you happy?
Mm-hmm.
Does that fulfill your life? Yeah, so fucking do it. And I will be there to support you.
Mm. Let's bring this full circle. You spoke on legacy before, early in the episode. Your time runs out. There's no more. What is your truth in terms of what makes you most happy on this planet that you want to share with others?
Obviously, family is the first thing everybody's going to go to in this situation. Family makes me happy, but at the same time, I like seeing the success of others around me. My team, my wife, my kids, my brother, my mother. Like, I love, and I like helping them get there. Mm. You know, when they need help, I'm there and I want to help them become better people, better business people, better employees, better spouses, parents, etc. I like being a part of that. And for my legacy, I want people to remember that. Remember that. And not because I need some kind of validation or anything, but I just like making the people around me better. Not because I think I'm better than them, but because I think that not everybody lives to their full potential. And we sell ourselves short as human beings.
I like that, man. Roman, I'm grateful for you, man.
I'm grateful for you. This was an awesome experience. Awesome. And top-notch setup, too. This might be one of the most elaborate podcast setups I've ever seen.
Yeah, listen. Well, that's credit to the man behind the camera. Claudio, the voice, Valenzuela, if you will. I wish you the best in business, personally, obviously, professionally. If there's anything that we can ever do for you, I look forward to supporting your growth and your network.
Appreciate you.
And I'm happy to be a part of yours as well. So thank you for the conversation today.
My pleasure, man. Thank you for
having
me.
Where can everybody find you and connect with you?
You can call or text me, 347-403-4831. How do you like that?
Wow. I've never heard a phone number given.
Yeah?
You might get blown up.
It's all right. Blow me up. Instagram at roman.therealtor.
Is there a reason why you didn't go with the last name?
I think
it rolls off the tongue nice.
You are
Vladimirsky, Roman Vladimirsky.
So most people
why is
don't
that
even,
hard?
Most people don't even attempt my last name, but they fucking butcher my first name.
Roman.
Roland, Ronan, Ramon, Raymond.
Oh my God.
It's crazy.
Oh man. All right. Well, Roman, thank you very much for joining us. Guys, as always, we have to say thank you to you, the listener. We have one ask in 2024, and that is share the show. If you found any value in what we do, share it on Instagram, send it to a friend. We couldn't be more grateful for you. As always, you can shop the latest merch at nosnoozeshop.com. And as we wrap up, I'm giving Claudio the voice some time to get on here. As always, until next time, stop snoozing.
Get up and get after it.
Roman Vladimirsky.
Nailed it.
Nailed it.
Let's go.
Thank you guys for tuning in. That's another epi in the books. You can follow us on Instagram at No Snooze Podcast and leave us a 5-star review wherever you listen to us. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, No Snooze. Shop the latest merch at nosnoozeshop.com. Come on.